When you turn to the Word of God, one of the most common quoted passages of Scripture comes from John chapter 3 and verse 16. It's referred to as the golden text of the Bible. For God so loved the world that He gave His only begotten Son, that whosoever believeth in Him should not perish, but have everlasting life. That passage talks about God. It talks about God's love for the world of people, you and me. And that's a subject we like to talk about, don't we? We like to talk about the love of God. We like to preach about the love of God. We like to talk about the love of Jesus. And we like to preach sermons about the love of Jesus. And when we stand beside an open grave, we emphasize that Jesus, in His love and mercy, came, and part of His ministry was to heal the brokenhearted. And we like to talk about the compassionate nature of Jesus Christ. And we talk about the gentle Jesus, meek and mild. And yet, Jesus was a multifaceted individual. And it's a different side of Jesus we see in our text this morning. Mark chapter 3 and verse 5 shows us a picture of Jesus that brings and comes as a surprise to most people. It says that when He had looked round about on them with anger, being grieved at the hardness of their hearts. A lot of folks see that and read that, and it actually is a positive shock to them. Because anger is not something we think about and associate with Jesus. When we visualize Jesus Christ, we see the loving Jesus gathering little children into His arms to bless them. We see Him sitting on a well curb talking to an outcast Samaritan woman and telling her that living water is for her, and He talks to her about the deep things of God. And we hear Jesus tell that bit of damaged goods that she can have a spring of living water coming up inside of her. A spring that's going to meet all of her needs for time and for eternity. Those scenes of Jesus and the little children, or Jesus with that outcast Samaritan woman, they're fitting and they're proper. And those are pictures of Jesus that are pleasing to us. But in our text, we see that same gracious, loving man with cheeks aflame with anger. We see him with eyes that are flashing fire. And it seems so out of character to us that we almost literally gasp in amazement. And that makes us ask the question, why does the anger of the Lord take us so much by surprise? Well, to be blunt, anger is something that doesn't exactly have an untarnished reputation, does it? The ancient Greeks and the ancient Romans did not list anger among the desirable virtues for a life. And when you read the Beatitudes, you don't ever see Jesus in there saying, "Blessed are the angry because." And yet anger is not even something that's distinctively human. Now understand something. Everyone can become angry. It is not a mark of distinction. Beasts can also become angry. In fact, it reminded me of a story I read about an old schoolmaster one time. And the story of the old schoolmaster actually made me think of Matt. Matt's very first teaching job was out in Mason, Texas. And Mason, Texas is in farming and ranching country. And it's out in the middle of nowhere. And the people there are very resilient and very self-sufficient. Now, I want you to picture that Matt is in his very first teaching job. He's fresh out of college and he's sitting in the classroom one morning early. And this man comes walking into the room, wearing worn and faded jeans and boots that obviously bear the marks of having been working a lot of cattle and working it recently. A weathered sheepskin coat, 4 or 5 days of beard stubble, and as Matt described it, a knife in a sheath about that long hanging from his belt. That man walked into the classroom and in a gravelly voice said, "I'm looking for Coach Perkins. Are you him?" And Matt says, "Yes, sir. I'm him." Well, as it turned out, the man said, "Well, Coach, I need to talk to you about my boy. He plays junior high football." "Yes, sir." "Well, we were having a little," it's on a Monday morning, said, "we had a little camp out with the family over the weekend. We had a campfire, and he managed to walk into that fire barefooted and burned a big hole in his heel. We took him to the doctor. Doctor put some ointment on it, put a bandage on it, said he can't play football for about 2 weeks. He said, "But I looked at it this morning, Coach. I think he can play football, so you just, whatever you want to have him do, you have him do it. It's all right with me." Matt said, "Thank you, sir." Well, now I want you to picture that scene. And this old schoolmaster was teaching in a country school in a place that was very self-sufficient like that. And this schoolmaster strongly believed in the study of Latin and Greek, and he gave special attention to it. Well, it seems one day a quite rugged man came to see the headmaster, a man with a knife and a sheath about this long. And he said, "I want to tell you, I'm objecting. He strenuously objected to his son making a study of Latin and Greek. And in a very heated tone of voice, he told the headmaster of the school, "I want my son to have a practical education. I want him to know practical things. I want him to know how to milk a cow." And the headmaster said, "Well, I agree with you on that. I want him to know practical things too. I want him to know Latin and Greek, but I want him to know practical things. I want him to know how to milk a cow, but I want him to know how to do some things better than that a calf can't do better than he can." My point is that's the way it is with anger. Any beast can become angry. Having a quick and fiery temper is not something to be proud of. There are certain beasts that have a quick and fiery temper. I've actually seen cats become really angry just because you pulled their tail a little bit too hard. I've heard of elephants turning on their trainers, and yet when an elephant turns on his trainer, they don't give it a medal, they usually shoot it. But we can all get angry. Every one of us. So can beasts. So can reptiles. A high capacity for anger is not necessarily a mark of distinction among men and women. Brilliant sons of genius, people with the highest IQs imaginable, can get angry. So can morons. Wise, saintly, gray-haired men can get angry. So can six-week-old babies. Have you ever seen an infant angry? If the average baby had strength in proportion to the fierceness of their anger, very few mothers would even live to see the little angels turn a year old. So that's anger of Jesus. This anger of Jesus that we read about, it comes as a surprise to us. Because the average garden variety of anger doesn't have a high batting average in our daily lives. And it doesn't take much reflection on the subject to understand why it's that way. When we blow up, probably nobody in here has ever done that, right? But when you blow up, when we blow up, or when someone we know blows up, right? We hardly ever hear someone say, "I got angry," do we? What do we say? "I got mad." And you know, that actually describes our situation much more accurately. Because most folks, when they get angry, good and angry, they are less than sane. Reason is pushed aside. Love is shown the door. And we do senseless things that we would not do if we weren't acting outrageously. You look in the Bible, anger doesn't have a high rating in the Bible. Believe it or not, the Apostle Paul was a man with a very fiery temper. And there's a certain occasion over in Acts chapter 23 where Paul let his temper get the best of him. It's in a very conspicuous way. A certain high priest ordered that Paul be slapped. And Paul burned with hot indignation and responded to the man. He said, "God shall strike you, you whitewashed wall." Well, a little later, Paul came to his senses, recovered himself, and he apologized. And from his own experience, he learned the wisdom of that passage in the Psalms. Be you angry and sin not. And that last word is added there on purpose. Because anger often gives birth to sin. Anger makes us break off diplomatic relations with our fellow man. It causes us at times to fret. It causes us to puff up. And it causes us to pout. In many cases, it even causes us to break with the church and to break with those we deeply love. And more often than not, when that happens, folks just never seem to find their way back. And yet, in spite of the charges against anger, we face the fact that Jesus Christ sometimes blazed with hot, fiery indignation. How can that be? In spite of its many dangers and defects, believe it or not, anger sometimes might be a virtue rather than a vice. In that respect, it's somewhat akin to money. You've heard people say, "Well, money's the root of all evil." No, it's not. The love of money is the root of all evil. Money is not evil or good in itself. Money is power. Rightly used, it can do a great deal of good. Wrongly used, it can do endless harm. The same thing's true of anger. Anger is also power. An angry man will often dare and do what he would not do without his anger. And the anger of Jesus was right. It was righteous anger. And not simply because it was the anger of Jesus Christ. It was because it was right in itself. It was right because Jesus Himself was right. Simon Peter was telling a sober truth when he talked about Jesus and said He knew no sin. Jesus urged every individual to pray for forgiveness. And yet, though Jesus was sensitive to sin, not one time do we ever see or hear Jesus asking to be forgiven. Have you ever thought about anger as it relates to us individually? What angers us as individuals? What makes me angry? What makes you angry? The answer to that question tells us what kind of person we are. What made Jesus angry? Let's look at a few events that filled Jesus, three specifically, that filled Jesus with flaming anger. The one we read in our text. That day, going into the synagogue, Jesus met a man with a heavy handicap. One of his hands was withered. Dr. Luke tells us it was his right hand. That day and time, that era of history, had no place for the physically unfit. The handicapped were driven to beggary. But Jesus was eager to give that man a chance. Jesus longed to give that man the privilege of becoming a giver rather than a getter. Now, on the surface, wouldn't you think everyone would agree with that? To help this man, to help him overcome his handicap. But there were certain religionists, because it was the Sabbath, there were certain religious persons who did not agree with giving him a chance. They thought more of their petty rules and their petty regulations than of giving this man with the withered hand a chance. And in our text in Mark chapter 3, they practically dared Jesus to heal this man. And what did we see? Jesus looked on them with anger. An anger that scorched and blistered and burned. Whenever any man or woman is robbed of their chance in life, the anger of Jesus Christ burns against whatever evil it is that robs them of their chance in life. There's another occasion where Jesus goes into the temple. Jeremiah tells us the temple was to be the house of prayer for all nations. And yet that day that Jesus went there, prayer was impossible. It was next to impossible. It was drowned out by the pandemonium that Jesus found there in the temple that day. There was the pandemonium of the buyers and the sellers and the cattle and the money changers. And it angered Jesus. And He took some cords and He made a scourge and He drove the frightened cattle out of the temple. He drove the sheep that were there for sacrifice. Equally shocking to Jesus was the shrieking of the money changers and their victims. And so He became intensely angry. And not only did He become angry, He went into action. He did one of the most shocking things of His entire ministry. After He had taken that scourge and driven the cattle and the sheep out of the temple, He took the money changers' tables and overturned them, and their coins started clattering across the floor. It angered Him. He said, "My Father's house shall be called a house of prayer. You've made it a den of thieves." People were being robbed in the name of God, and it made Jesus angry with a righteous and holy anger. And then there was another time when Jesus' misguided friends got in the way of little children that were coming to Jesus. Children being brought to Jesus to be blessed. And His disciples were getting in the way. "No, don't bother Him. Don't bother the Master." And we read that when Jesus saw what was going on, He was indignant. Because the love of Jesus for those children was so tender. He made the declaration it would be better to be drowned in the sea with a millstone around one's neck than to cause a little one to go wrong. Jesus' anger was righteous anger. It was anger that was right and was just. Because Jesus' anger was never born of self-love. Nowhere in this book can you find any instance where Jesus blazed with anger because of some insult or some injury directed against Him. Remember what Peter wrote about His character as he wrote his letters later? "When He was reviled, He reviled not again. He did not seek to retaliate against those who reviled Him. He didn't seek to get even with them in some way." Peter was an apostle that had flammable written all over him. And yet, he could never cease to marvel at this beautiful characteristic of Jesus Christ. How different that is it not, to the attitude that most of us have? Jesus never got angry at a wrong that was done to Himself. And yet most of us seldom get angry over any other reason except that. Many of us many people, I'll say, can look with quiet eyes, as oftentimes might is triumphant over what is right. It's only when they themselves are wronged that they blaze with anger. Jesus wasn't that way. Jesus' anger always led to helpful action. When I get angry, when someone does me wrong, honest confession, my first reaction is I want to get back at them. I want to get back at them at the worst way that I possibly can. I would be so bold right now as to say I'm not the only person in this room that has that attitude. Somebody does us wrong, we want to get even with them. If it's the last thing we do, we're going to get even with them. That wasn't the case with Jesus. Jesus has a longing to give both the person wronged and the person wrongdoer, a second chance. When Jesus cleansed the temple, He was seeking no less to help those who were cheating as He was those who were being cheated. Jesus cleansed the temple on a Monday. He went to die for those who were being robbed and those who were robbing on Friday of that same week. The anger of Jesus always had and was born of a right motive. What about our anger? Mine, yours. The Bible tells us there are four kinds of anger. There's sudden anger, a flashpoint, something that must be controlled. There's sinful anger, anger that must be condemned. There's stubborn anger. None of us know about that, would we? Anger that must be conquered. And then there's righteous anger. That's the anger of Jesus. That's the anger that we must have, you and me. That's the anger that must be channeled in the right direction. Remember what Paul wrote in Ephesians 4, verse 26. He said, "Be you angry and sin not." Now, in some respects, it's going to shock you. Maybe the church of the 21st century needs an infusion of anger. Did you hear what I said? Maybe we need to become angry at the corruption that exists in our world. Maybe we need to become angry at the forces of evil. Maybe we need to become angry because of the millions of abortions that happen in this country. Maybe we need to get angry about the increase in crime and murder and rape. Maybe we need to get angry about the abuse of alcohol and drugs in our society. Maybe it's time to get angry that millions of people are lost and dying and going to their grave and passing to judgment without the knowledge of Jesus Christ. Maybe it's time to get angry with those who leave the church and do everything within their power to destroy and damage and harm the family of God once they've left the church. Maybe it's time. Maybe it's time for the church to become angry with a sanctified anger, a holy anger, a righteous anger, an anger channeled in the right direction. So be angry, but don't sin. Don't let the sun go down on your wrath. Don't let anger and the devil have a foothold in your life. We must channel our anger as a righteous anger. The kind of anger that Jesus had. And an anger like that can accomplish victories for Jesus Christ. The great question is, are you following the Lord this morning? If you're not, He stands ready and willing to come into your heart, come into your life, and be Lord and Master of your life. Have you left Him? You'll find Him where He was. And He stands ready and waiting for you to return and make Him Lord and Master of your life once again. It's His invitation as we stand and while we sing.